Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
This is unacceptable.
A violent holiday weekend in Chicago has officials looking for answers. A project protecting the Great Lakes from invasive carp moves forward. Cleanup begins following the NASCAR street race, but critics say the risks outweigh the reward.
Though it will be the city's 27th time hosting a national political convention, it's tough to know what to expect from the event.
And with the Republican National Convention a week away, we look at Chicago's history of political conventions. And now to some of today's top stories. Families of the victims killed in two Boeing plane crashes are pushing back on a settlement the company reached with the Justice Department. DOJ officials say the company has agreed to plead guilty to a criminal fraud charge stemming from the two 737 MAX crashes that killed 346 people. Under the deal, Boeing would face fines up to $487 million, a fraction of the nearly $25 billion that families wanted the aircraft maker to pay. Attorneys for the families are filing an objection to the settlement. In a statement, they say, quote, much more evidence has been presented over the last 5 years that demonstrates that the culture of Boeing putting profits over safety hasn't changed. The plea agreement only furthers that skewed corporate objective. And in full disclosure, Clifford Law Offices is a supporter of WTTW. Illinois State Police say shootings on Chicago area expressways are down for the third straight year. Now, halfway through 2024, ISP reports a 36% decrease compared to this time last year and a 65% decrease from 2021. The agency says part of the reason for the reduction is the use of technology like automated license plate readers, as well as special agents pursuing leads. Among the challenges, though, victims and witnesses are increasingly reporting road rage being involved in expressway shootings. And meanwhile, whether you're driving on an expressway or not, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has two words for drivers: slow down.
Speeding is stressful, it's inconsiderate to other drivers, and it makes you a danger to yourself, your passengers, and everyone else on the road. We all share the road, so slow down, enjoy the ride, and get to your destination safely.
At Navy Pier today, the agency, also known as NHTSA, launched a $9.5 million campaign through the end of the month, reminding motorists to ease off the gas as the summer travel season is in full swing. Officials also released data showing that while speed-related crashes fell slightly in 2022, speed was still a contributing factor in almost a third of all traffic fatalities. And it doesn't only happen on highways. 87% of all speed-related traffic fatalities occurred on non-interstate roads. Up next, calls for community support after a violent holiday weekend in Chicago. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Mayor Brandon Johnson is promising consequences after a violent holiday weekend in Chicago. More than 100 people were shot and 19 were killed across the city. It marks a significant jump over the same weekend last year when 11 people were fatally shot. The mayor and Chicago Police Superintendent held a news conference earlier today calling for accountability.
This is enough. We need to ensure that we are holding every single individual accountable for the pain and trauma and the torment that they have caused in this city. And there will be consequences. There will be consequences for the violence. We will not let criminal activity ruin and harm our city.
And WTTW News reporter Matt Masterson joins us now. Matt, what were some of the takeaways from today's news conference?
The mayor spoke about how this violence struck him on a personal level. He said he was heartbroken by what had happened. And as we heard, he called for consequences for those who he said were making the choice to fire these weapons and endanger people or kill people around them. He said last month he called on his federal partners for more additional funding and to respond to mass shootings in Chicago the way that they federal partners respond to them in other places across the country. He said the city needs additional funding for to address the root causes of violence, and decried the fact that it continues to be far too easy to access illegal weapons in Chicago. He wants to see more work done at the state level and at the federal level to help keep those weapons out of the city.
Did officials say whether any policing adjustments were made over the course of the weekend?
Yeah, so Police Superintendent Larry Snelling said his department has to be flexible. He's talked about this a lot over large-scale weekends like this in the past, but they need to be flexible as crime patterns change and shift even throughout the course of a single day. So if there's a shooting or a mass shooting in an area, more officers are sent to there to process the scene, handle victims, and also prevent retaliatory violence that could happen later on. As for resources, the CPD tomorrow on Tuesday is hosting an emergency assistance center on South Racine for victims to provide them with assistance services not only for victims of crimes from this past weekend or this year, but anyone in the past who's ever needed these sort of resources in the past can go and get those tomorrow.
So at today's news conference, Police Superintendent Larry Snelling called on community members who may have information about the shootings to come forward.
We need every single person to step up. Please give us information. And I'll tell you, most of the cases where we've been able to solve fairly quickly, it's because we've had outreach from the community.
And additionally, Matt, did Mayor Johnson give any indication at today's event about whether he's reconsidering getting rid of the gunshot detection technology ShotSpotter?
He said he's not having any second thoughts about it. Of course, the city is set to do away with ShotSpotter in September after the Democratic National Convention. But the technology was cited by the police department over this weekend as actually having alerted them to some of these fatal shootings. And as we know, some older persons in the city have pushed to keep this technology in their own wards. But Mayor Johnson said that the violence over this weekend has not had him swayed to change his mind on that front.
So we're about 6 weeks away from the DNC in Chicago. As you mentioned, did officials show any concern over the police's ability to handle these large-scale events in the wake of this weekend's violence?
Right. They did not. Superintendent Larry Snelling again said that the violence over the weekend wasn't a police issue or a preparation issue, but more of a societal issue, again pointing to what Mayor Johnson had said about a lack of resources or the ease of illegal firearms in the city. Officers in Chicago have been preparing for months and months for the mass protests, the mass gatherings that are going to be specific to the Democratic National Convention. And the police department doesn't believe that anything that happened over this past weekend is really going to affect them or change their plans going forward for the DNC when it comes here next month.
Okay. Matt Masterson, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Matt's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news.
Chicago Tonight's coverage of public safety is supported by the Su Ling Jin Charitable Foundation Initiative for Reducing Violence in Chicago.
Illinois is signing on to a project to stop invasive carp from entering the Great Lakes. This comes months after months of negotiations between state and federal governments over who would be on the hook for the bill. Advocates are applauding the state for joining in, saying the Brandon Road Interbasin Project is the last chance to protect waterways. Joining us now with more is Molly Flanagan, the Chief Operating Officer and Vice President of Programs at the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Molly, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So remind us what makes carp so problematic first.
Yeah, there are two big reasons we don't want carp in the Great Lakes. One is that they destroy the ecology of the lakes. They eat the same food that native fish eat, and they also live in the same habitats. So you get carp, they eat the food, they occupy the habitats, you lose native species. The second is that they harm the economy. They could harm the economy of the Great Lakes. Silver carp jump out of the water when bothered, so think of a kayak paddle or a boat motor, and having 30, 40, 50-pound fish flying into moving people can be really harmful. And so it's a bad 1-2 punch with harming the ecology and the economy of the lakes.
What would happen or what could happen to the ecosystem should they reach the Great Lakes?
We've seen places in other parts of the country where invasive carp make up to 90% of the biomass in rivers. We don't want that in the Great Lakes region. We don't want it in rivers that feed the Great Lakes. We don't want it in the Great Lakes themselves. And so it's critical to keep them out now. This is one of those, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If they get in, we can't get them out.
Can't stop them. And they also seem to be plentiful.
Yes, they are. They're very successful breeding fish. And so it allows them to really take over waterways rapidly.
So lots of them. They can have an impact, it sounds like, on fishing, other industries, but recreation as well. You mentioned kayaking, for example.
Sure, boating, fishing, you know, people who enjoy spending time on the lake. If they don't enjoy spending time on the lake, that has ripple effects for communities around the Great Lakes that depend on that tourism industry for dollars.
Project has been in the work for several years. What is the status currently?
Yeah, so we're really close to breaking ground. After Illinois, Michigan, and the federal government signed the agreement last week, it sounds like we'll be able to break ground at Brandon Road in January of 2025.
And Brandon Road is near Joliet?
That's correct.
Okay. Explain for us what some of the deterrents that the Brandon Road Interbasin Project uses to stop the fish from getting into the Great Lakes.
Sure. You can think of Brandon Road as a fish gauntlet. So it has to go through a lot of different things in order to get to the Great Lakes, which we hope never happens. There are bubble barriers. There are sound barriers. The fish don't like these things. When they get into them, they swim away. There are electric barriers. So when they get to the electric barrier, they essentially get shocked and swim away. There's something called a flushing lock, so that if you get eggs or fish larvae in the actual lock, that all gets flushed out and back downstream before a barge goes in and can go through.
Right, and that barge would potentially carry the roe or the eggs with.
That's right. So that's exactly what this is designed to not have happen.
Okay. And so obviously, like we mentioned, that this has been in the works for some time, but nothing has actually been done as far as construction or evaluating the site or any of that so far. Where are we?
There's been the design and engineering for the project is done. There's $274 million in federal funding ready to go. That's enough money to complete the first increment of the project. There's $114 million in non-federal funding between Illinois and Michigan. That's the amount of money that's needed for the entire project. So we have a lot of money, we now have a lot of momentum, and we hope we can keep that moving forward to stop invasive carp from moving forward.
How much more significant or efficient is this project going to be at stopping the carp compared to what's previously been done?
Yeah, so right now we're depending on harvesting and monitoring and some good luck to keep the fish from moving forward to Lake Michigan. This project is going to be much more protective and add a significant number of layers of protection that we hope will keep invasive carp out of the Great Lakes in perpetuity.
Why is this location at Brandon Road, why is that important? Why is that crucial?
So it's a choke point in the river. The fish haven't made it that far yet, and there's a lock and a dam. So if you have construction and technologies at the lock to keep fish from moving, they can't get over the dam. And so we have a good place where the fish, we can basically impede the fish's movement everywhere.
Okay, so they'll probably get stuck where
exactly
right
they get
there.
Stuck and then flushed back down.
You've said, of course, many times that, you know, we're running out of time on this issue. What do you hope the timeline looks like for this going forward now that we have a timeline for at least breaking ground?
Yeah, I mean, I hope the timeline doesn't shift at all. The Corps has said if all the federal funding gets into place, this project could be done in 6 to 8 years. That means everything needs to go smoothly. That means we really need to see this project get started in January.
As long as the fish don't speed up.
Yes, as long as we don't see fish. And I don't think we will. There's a lot of protections in place to monitor for those fish and to take action if there are any spotted in the waterways.
Okay, best of luck to the environmentalists who are working on this, making sure that the fish don't make it to the Great Lakes. Molly Flanagan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Up next, NASCAR is driving out of Chicago, but not without leaving behind some skid marks. Look at that right after this. Downtown roadways are starting to reopen now that the weekend's NASCAR festivities are done. The race returned to the Windy City for the second year after adding $109 million to Chicago's economy last summer. But some don't think the attraction is worth the damage that it causes to the streets and the environment. Joining us now with more are Leslie Recht, president of the Grant Park Advisory Council, and Catherine Tellock, co-founder and executive director of Chicago Environmentalists. Thank you both for joining us. Leslie Recht, starting with you, please, what was your reaction to Mayor Johnson when he announced that NASCAR would be returning?
Well, the Advisory Council has raised some issues about just what NASCAR is contributing to both the Park District and the city. And our main concern was, first of all, the permit fees that they're paying are much smaller than the permit fees being paid, for instance, by Lollapalooza and Suenos. They pay about $12 million last year, and this year the increase in the permit fee went from $500,000 to $550,000 for NASCAR. So we don't feel they're paying their fair share, but also they're not contributing to the park in terms of, they do fix a lot of the damage that they do, but they don't fix it all, and Lollapalooza has shown that it's really important to put an investment into Grant Park, like the $500,000 they donated for the new pickleball and tennis courts.
Grant Park, as you've mentioned, you know, it's the scene of a lot of events over the course of the summer, Lollapalooza being a very big one, of course, the Suenos Music Festival as well. But what is the impact on the park as well as nearby residents of so much use in a compacted amount of time?
Absolutely. I think that over the years, there have been more and more large events in Grant Park, and there are more than 110,000 residents who live downtown who look at Grant Park as their neighborhood park. And so the impact is on the residents, it's on the businesses, it's on the museums, people trying to get to and from. So there are a lot of impacts when you have an event like NASCAR, and these are the kinds of things that we believe haven't been taken into account sufficiently.
Catherine, what was your reaction to the return of NASCAR?
Yeah, so I think that I just want to start off by saying that NASCAR is not Chicago's only environmental issue. NASCAR is not its primary source of emissions, and I just want to raise that before we move forward. But I think that I can speak for a lot of people within Chicago environmentalists when I say that we are concerned about the tone that it sets for the city and what it says about the direction we're taking as a whole. We are in a climate crisis. We see the effects of that every day on the news. We have record-breaking heat. We have severe storms that are happening more frequently than ever. We have drought. I could go on forever, but we are seeing those effects every day. So why is our city leadership choosing to reinforce a culture that says that burning fossil fuels for entertainment is acceptable? Why are we promoting that when there are so many other more sustainable event options that could bring as much or more economic impact to the city?
You know, some scientists have argued that those cars, because it's a limited time event, aren't contributing quite as much gases and fumes and diminishing the quality of the air. And because those roadways are blocked off, there's a bunch of cars that are being taken off the road for that period of time. Tell me a little bit about your environmental concern from this race.
Right. So I think that it is a matter of perspective. If you are looking at it as a person who is seeing the broader impact that air quality affects everyone, that we are a city that has struggled with air quality issues for a long time, that some neighborhoods in the city, environmental justice areas, already struggle to breathe, that have higher rates of asthma and other respiratory issues, and we are choosing to pollute our air intentionally for the sake of a tourist event, for the sake of entertainment, when other people are already struggling. Does that make sense? If we had a severe drought in the city of Chicago and some neighborhoods were barely getting access to water, would we build a temporary water park downtown for a tourist attraction? Would we do that?
Leslie, last year the taxpayer spent $3.25 million in overtime for police officers, repairs for the city roadways. Will that be the same this year?
No, that's one of the changes that Mayor Johnson has made. This year, that amount is going to be paid by by NASCAR, but of course the streets were already paved. The paving of the streets was something that NASCAR didn't pay for last year. The overtime police, of course, they should have been paying for all along. So that's one thing that they are taking on this year.
Catherine, you recently shared a poll on social media for the NASCAR race asking if people think that the event is a good thing for Chicago. What was the outcome? What was the reaction?
Yeah, so I mean, very universally negative amongst people who are in our group, which are people who care about environmental sustainability. It was, I think, 95% said that they did not think it was a good thing for the city. And additionally, Chicagoans nor city council members were consulted when this decision was made by our previous mayor. So we really did not get a chance to say anything before it started happening.
We know that this was the second year of a three-year contract, but beyond that, you know, if NASCAR should become a regular Chicago event, what would be your reaction to something like that, and how might you argue against the city for it? Leslie, I'll start with you.
Well, I think there are definitely pros and cons. I don't want to say that all the members of the advisory council are of one mind. And so some think that it is a positive event. Some have big issues with it. I think the key to me is, what is NASCAR bringing back to Grant Park, to the city? They need to pay more. From my perspective, they have TV contracts that are worth somewhere around $10 billion for 10 years for all of their races. And they were arguing that they wanted more money because they came to Chicago, because they're getting more viewership. They're getting more money. They're not sharing it with either Chicago or the Park District.
A couple seconds left, Catherine. Same question to you.
Yeah, so I would say that I would say that most people are not in favor within our group of this race continuing. And I would say that if you feel the same way amongst viewers, please reach out to the mayor's office. Reach out to your alderman. Get loud about why you don't want this race to continue, because it is not in our best interest as a city.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Catherine Tellock and Leslie Recht, thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Up next, WTTW News explains Chicago's storied political convention history. But first, a look at the weather. The Republican National Convention in Milwaukee is a week away. That means the Democratic National Convention in Chicago is also right around the corner. Amanda Vinicky has the scoop on Chicago's long history with national political conventions in our latest edition of WTTW News Explains.
Chicago is set to host the Democratic National Convention this summer. And though it will be the city's 27th time hosting a national political convention, it's tough to know what to expect from the event. Perhaps because Chicago conventions have been some of the most memorable, raucous, and consequential in American history. Take the first Chicago convention in 1860. Republicans chose a young Illinois lawyer named Abraham Lincoln to be their standard bearer, even though Lincoln didn't even attend the convention himself. Then there was 1912, where the scene at the Republican convention was so tense that police and barbed wire surrounded the venue. It was former President Teddy Roosevelt versus his successor, the incumbent William Howard Taft. And while Roosevelt won most of the primaries, party leaders picked Taft anyway. The next day, Roosevelt supporters formed the New Progressive Party, and 6 weeks later, hosted their own convention in the same building, naming Teddy their nominee. In 1932, during the depths of the Depression, Chicago hosted both the Republican and Democratic conventions. Republicans nominated Herbert Hoover for re-election, while the Democrats chose Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who introduced a landmark proposal for the very first time.
I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people.
The 1952 conventions were the first to be televised live, coast to coast. Both were held in Chicago again, with Democrats nominating Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson, even though he explicitly said he did not want the job. He went on to lose in a landslide to Republican nominee Dwight Eisenhower.
I like it.
Fast forward to the infamous 1968 Democratic Convention, which descended into violence when Chicago police and Illinois National Guardsmen clashed with thousands of anti-war protesters in Grant Park, with Mayor Daley defending law enforcement.
The policeman isn't there to create disorder.
The policeman is there to preserve this order.
The Democratic Party walked away having nominated Hubert Humphrey, and the party divisions highlighted in Chicago helped Richard Nixon beat Humphrey that fall. It was 28 years before Chicago got a return engagement, and perhaps the most outrageous thing that happened in 1996 was delegates dancing the Macarena ahead of President Bill Clinton accepting his renomination. So what's in store for 2024? We'll soon find out.
We'll find out soon, and you can find more of our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains, on our website. And make Chicago Tonight your home for the RNC next week. Join us live at 5:30 and 10 each convention night. We'll have live coverage from Milwaukee and analysis before and after PBS NewsHour. And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Our Spotlight Politics team on the first public hearing for a proposed merger of CTA, Metra, and PACE. Plus, a look at the years-long push to make city council more independent from the mayor. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its founder and senior partner, Robert Clifford, who ranked number one in the state of Illinois by Super Lawyers Top 10 2024 Illinois Super Lawyers List.